got a serious question for you this week. Have you ever had a grown man yell at you while you're peeing?
Let me think about that. I've had a vast and storied career. No, I don't think that has ever happened to me. No, what happened to you?
So my beautiful, wonderful wife takes me to the Emmys last night. And during commercial breaks, you have exactly like 2.5 minutes to get up from your seat, run to the back, go to the bathroom, run back to your seat, get back in the row, sit down before the cameras turn back on. And they do this big announcement, you know, you have 15 seconds, 10 seconds, 9, 8, and then they go silent, you know, and that, please begin applauding. And so I'm rushing back, and I got behind these women that had these beautiful gowns, but the trains were ridiculous, and I couldn't get around them without stepping on this $8,000 dress. So I'm just like, trying to go left, trying to go right, couldn't get to it, finally get to the bathroom. And then all of a sudden, there's this man yelling at me going, you have 45 seconds. He's British, by the way. You have 45 seconds left to pee before you have to get back on your seat. 45 seconds.
And oh, God.
I'm like, Leslie, you're not helping things by yelling at me.
I would have frozen up. I wouldn't have been able to do anything.
That was exactly my reaction. Is you're actively hurting your cause by yelling at me while I'm peeing. This is not making things go faster, Eustace. I don't know what you think you're... I'm trying to find the most English names I can.
Nigel. Nigel, I'm over here working on it.
Nigel, listen. Everyone here is doing their part. We're all collecting rubber for the war effort. Do it. Just let us be.
Forget about Netflix. I'm working on my own streaming event, and you're not helping.
Oh my God, it's not going to get better than that rejoinder. So I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the author of the Web Comics Handbook and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And a reminder that this show is going out live right now to our Patreon pals over at patreon.com/comiclab. You could be watching this show live streaming every week, Tuesday mornings. Join us for a concurrent live chat on the side and watching Brad's delightful face as I say this kind of thing. And if you happen to miss the show, it is archived every week, so you can check it out later if you missed it for life, love, or learning. And Brad, for those wondering, did Dave Kellett make it back to his seat in time? No, he did not. I did not, despite Nigel yelling at me, there's only so much I can do, Nigel. Listen, I was moving heaven and earth to get there. I was trying not to step on dresses. I had to wait outside until the next commercial break. So here's Dave Kellett making small talk with one of the producers of CSI Cincinnati or whatever the hell those CSI shows are. I've never watched CSI. And I'm like, so what do you do? He's like, oh, I'm a producer on CSI, whatever. And I don't know what the hell the show is. I'm like, oh, that's fun. That's great. Good for you.
Now you're out there talking to the producer. Is Hudson still there giving you stares from the bathroom?
Nigel's just like, he's holding his clip. By the way, he had a clipboard. I should have mentioned that. Somehow that made that worse. He had the little earphone in too, you know, the little like that extends down like Madonna in the 80s on stage, kind of a headphone. And you know, he's giving this signal like, wrap it up. I'm like, Nigel, my bladder can only do so much. But anyway, the stare from Nigel as the CSI producer and I couldn't make it in time. He's like, I guess we'll have to use seat fillers and like runs the little message down. Nigel.
You look at the CSI guy and he just looks at you and goes, bum, bum.
Have you ever gotten into those procedurals? I feel like every 65-year-old guy in the world watches that show, and I've never gotten into it.
I don't. I've never watched that. The closest to a procedural I watch is like Columbo technically falls into a procedural. I finally broke down and got a Peacock subscription just so my son can rewatch The Office for the 1,000,000th time. And I've gone through all of those old Columbo episodes again, and I adore each one of them. It's like a morsel of greatness.
Yeah.
Every darn one of them. But that's the closest I get to a procedural.
This is a bit of writing, so we can talk about this for a second. For me, procedurals, one of the things that I find annoying is they're designed to make people feel smarter than they are.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I don't enjoy watching a TV show where you're like, all right, it's clearly the butler. The fucking butler did it. It's so clear. Yeah. But there's some guy in Des Moines going, it's the butler. I figured it out. I know it's the butler. You're like, all right, good job, Greg. You did it. You solved the crime.
It's like solving the TV Guide crossword. You know, it's like It's like, yeah, you solved it, but it was like, you know, my mother, the blank, and it was a three letter word. Okay. Okay. You got car. That's wonderful. But you know, it's not one that you sit down at the restaurant and it's the first thing you tell the waitress, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Garfield hates blank days, three letters, blank days. I don't know. What could it be? Wednesday? All right, Brad.
That's when you can do an ink.
So, Brad, we got our first question for the week. I want to read it out to you. It's the question is called Feeling a Little Ziggy.
Oh,
and
no.
It says, Dear Brad and Dave, lately I've been feeling like Ziggy. I recently moved to a new city where I know no one. Solo studio apartment, and my significant other has recently left me because they don't want to try long distance. Stings, but is totally valid. Mm-hmm. This is reflecting on my studies and my art. What do you guys do when you're down in the dumps or in a rough spot? I would go to art or writing, but I think I'm being too self-critical to enjoy it. Thank you for being the company I need to fill the apartment with laughter, joy, and witty banter. Your advice would mean the world to me. Brad, we have all been here, first of all, Lord knows we'll be here again. Those moments in life, and it's not necessarily this situation, but those moments in life where you're feeling alone and you're feeling down about feeling alone and then feeling alone about feeling down about feeling alone. You know what I mean? Sometimes life just spirals in those moments.
Yeah.
But there's kind of two separate beats of advice here, probably specific to this question asker about new city, new apartment, new studio, new life, right?
Yeah.
How do you start that? But then also just how do you, I would be curious how Brad approaches life when Brad is in the doldrums and when things just aren't swinging for you. And maybe there's an English man yelling at you, Brad, in certain key moments. And how do you handle that? Because I was not prepared for that. No one told me how to handle an Englishman yelling at me when I'm trying to finish up.
What do you do when you look over your shoulder and Montague is giving you, daggers? I want to start with specific for this person's situation because I've got good specific advice. I don't know that I've got good general advice, but I got good specific advice. And this is one that was incredibly hard for me to learn. In fact, it took me until it was too late for me to learn this, but
too
it's
late.
Advice.
Oh no, that sounds terrible.
No. Well, right. No, I couldn't do. I you'll see what I mean in a minute. But what you need to do at this point in your life is you need to focus on being comfortable in your own skin. You need to be alone. You need to go into a restaurant, look that server in the face and say, table for one. You need to go to the park and sit on a bench by yourself and enjoy that experience. You need to go and do things, sign up for a tour. or a walk or whatever it is, and go by yourself and learn to enjoy doing things by yourself because it is possible. And if you've always done things as part of a couple or as part of a group, then it's going to feel very weird and awkward. And you're going to be nervous if you're like me. I was very nervous walking into a restaurant alone as a young person. But you got to do it. You got to go. Even if it's just going out on a walk or a jog or a bike ride, you've got to learn to be comfortable in your own skin. And here's what's going to happen. Once you are really, really enjoying the fullness of what it means to be you, then other people are going to be attracted to you. Not necessarily romantic attraction, although that can happen too, but they will gravitate towards you because we gravitate towards people who are confident, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about this as a cure to your love life or to replace your significant other, but you're going to find that you fall into conversations with people a lot more clearly and more easily. Once you are comfortable, 100% comfortable, and actually start to enjoy being on your own and appreciate that for what it is, not as a crutch or not as a consolation prize, but to say, I'm going to go home alone tonight. And that's fantastic because I've got this planned and that planned. And now I'm going to do that. Tomorrow I'm going to do that. And once you stop trying to fill your life with people and start trying to fill it with experiences, you're going to find that people are going to wind up in your life whether you want them there or not. And number two, if it doesn't necessarily happen or doesn't happen right away, you don't care because you're having too much fun being you. My advice to you in this moment is to get good and comfortable in your own skin, even if it means baby steps along the way, taking, you know, small steps toward it. This time in your life, my strongest advice to you is to be and start to be comfortable in your own skin.
Wow, that was really good and heartwarming advice. Yes, I will agree with that. I fully co-sign what Brad just said. And I will tell you as my own angle on this. I'll tell you first how I handled it in my 20s when I was on my own in a really small studio apartment in, not even studio, God, it was freaking tiny, tiny little apartment in Canterbury, England when I was by myself. And how I handle it then versus how I would handle it now, which I think it would be different. So my answer in my 20s was, all right, listen, I'm in England. For whatever reason, the group of people in my classes and in my job that I had, cause I had grad school classes. And then after that, I would work as an archivist in the Center for Cartoon and Caricature Studies, which is the big, I think I've told you this story before. It's sort of one of the big repositories of cartoon art in Britain. And I would work there archiving World War II cartoons. Really fun. Enjoyed it. None of my coworkers were my age by 4 decades or 5 decades. So it's not like we could, I mean, we could go out for beer and we did, but it was not like it, you know, it's not like we're joking around, hanging out, that kind of thing. And then my class, for whatever reason, and this happens in life, just the vibe check wasn't there. You know, we didn't have the same, we didn't have the same attitude towards life, and we were just different people going on different paths. So I made a little decision as a 20 whatever year old that, like, you know what, I'm just going to pour myself into my work. I'm going to get a lot of cartooning done. It's really actually that grad school is when I started posting Sheldon online in 1998, was from that student grad school account at the University of Kent in Canterbury, England, because I had nothing to do. And I was like, well, I'm working on my submission packets to syndicates. I might as well try to figure out this website stuff.
Yeah.
And so I poured myself into my grad school stuff and got it done early, which was great. And I recommend that. Mm-hmm. And then I also poured myself into Sheldon, which worked out right. But here's the thing. Socially, older me, I don't know that I would recommend that. And I think Brad has the smarter attitude, which is now that I'm older and more comfortable in my skin, my God, Brad, how much would you pay right now to have 2 hours alone in a great museum? Like nobody's tugging at your shirt strings. Nobody, you know, no one else is telling you where to go. You could just go to paintings that you wanted to go to, or sculptures that you wanted to go to. That seems lovely to me right now. So the idea of, and this is older us telling younger you that this actually is a great time in your life to really own and control where you want to go, do the things you want to do. Go explore your city. Try out at least, you know, they always say you have to schedule things into your life in order to make them happen. Schedule one block of time every week, if not consistently, to go out, take a new walking path home every day. So you're exploring new streets, try new restaurants every day. Don't fall into the same pattern of the same place. Go to different museums, go to different visual hikes in and around your city. And again, this is easy for older me to say because younger me didn't do that. But I would honestly tell you right now, if someone could say, Dave, you have 4 hours to go do whatever you want in LA, I could fill that time, no problem. Restaurants, museums, and be so comfortable in my skin. So own that individuality, as Brad said, and go out and explore your city is what I would add to it.
Oh, I got a great story about that. I was at it was New York Comic Con, and way back in the day, I tabled next to Alex Saviak, who was a Spider-Man penciler in the 80s and was like one of the top Marvel guys back in the day. And he was tabling next to me. And my first experience was I had my stuff late. I was very early at comic conventioneering, and I'd had my stuff tabled out, spread on the table a little bit far. And my first introduction to Alex was he was taking a ruler to his table and ruling out the area. And when he got to my side where I was encroaching, he just laid the ruler down and then looked at me. And I said, am I sorry about that. I'm a little bit in your space. He says, yes, you are. We kind of chuckled but like he wasn't a jerk. He was just like, he was finding his way to point that out. We became friends very quickly, and he's a great guy. So years later, we're at the New York Comic Con. He sees me out in the lobby, and he goes, hey, Brad, why don't you come to dinner with us? I'm going to have dinner with a bunch of friends and work buddies, and I'd love to introduce you. He was really into what I was doing in webcomics. Yep. Because he had kind of gotten, he was not thrilled with how, publishing was treating him at that time. And, it was like, yeah, I'd love to, but I said, I gotta be honest with you. My kids were little at that time. I go, I gotta be honest with you. I'm in New York. I'm alone and I've got nobody telling me what to do. I'm going to go find a restaurant and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to order and I'm just going to enjoy being all alone. And I know that sounds antisocial, but I've been looking forward to this all day. your offer is super kind. I'm gonna there's an Indian restaurant right over there and I'm just gonna go and sit. I also remembered that, you know what else Alex Saviuk does is he was doing the Spider-Man comic strip. And you know who his work friends probably were? Larry Lieber. Larry Lieber's brother, Stan Lee. He was probably hanging out with who knows, maybe John Romita. He had like his friend group were all people that I would idolize.
I would have killed to have a meal with. Yeah.
Yeah. This might've been the best dinner in the world, but you know what? And as much as, and listen, if that offer comes around again, I would take it in a heartbeat, but also it was so wonderful to just go and again, look that person in the eye and say table for one and go and sit down. And I had the nicest dinner. I really enjoyed just sitting there being with my own thoughts and hanging out. Yeah. And I think it, of course I was in my 40s. I think at that point, it's different if you're a younger person, which I think our question asker is, where if you're alone, immediately you start thinking, well, what's wrong with me that I'm alone? What's my deficiency? What's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with you. You don't need to have another person around you to be a legitimate human being. Take this opportunity. Like Dave said, if you've got a little extra time on your hands, throw it into something that you really enjoy doing, but don't get hung up in this whole thing that there's something wrong with you, that you need to fill it with people. This is actually a fantastic opportunity that's just floating right out in front of you. Take that opportunity.
Agreed. Hey, a separate note from Stan Lee. Do you remember when we had that super quiet breakfast in Seattle for Emerald City Comic Con? Totally empty restaurant. Yes. And the only other person sitting at it was you, I think Scott Kurtz and I. And the only other person sitting at a table was Stan Lee. And yeah. We're like, well, this is weird that we're in this big restaurant and the only other person is Stan Lee. And you would just hear him because he had this huge bodyguard. It was like a baby Huey looking guy just sitting with him. And you every once in a while, you hear little snippets of conversation about, oh, these eggs are fantastic. Can you pass this, y'all? And we're like, this is delightful that we're just sitting, hearing like little, you know, pumperings from Stan Lee. It was great.
And at different times, we thought to ourselves, because I know we debated, do we go over and say hi to him?
And I remember debating.
And we finally decided it was better this way, because if you're Stan Lee, you can't. I remember saying this sentence. If you're Stan Lee, you cannot get through a breakfast without being asked for an autograph. The nicest gift we can give to this person is to give him one breakfast out of thousands that he doesn't get interrupted and he can just eat his eggs, you know? Yeah. And it's like that, you know what? We decided in the moment we were going to give him that gift as pompous as that sounds, but it's like, no, we're not. We made the conscious decision not to interrupt this guy. It was the nicest thing we could think to do for him at that moment.
Yeah. Because all of us came to the decision, like, it's kind of an asshole move. We get to say hi to Stan Lee. Yes. Yeah. But for God's sakes, the guy's going to be spending the next 8 hours going, fantastic, nice to meet you, Excelsior, you know, all right, let's take this photo. And, you know, it's nice to just let the guy have his breakfast before we started the day. So I have zero regrets about that. But my final thought to this question asker is, in whatever new city you are, I guarantee you there is some form of either a drink and draw meetup that you can go to, and just search the exact phrase drink and draw. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice social way in a wonderful setting with usually young people where you can draw and you're talking and you're, and let's be honest about it. A drink and draw is a bunch of other shy, introverted artists that are coming out, trying to come out of their shell. So that's a great opportunity. Another one is take a live drawing class. Mm-hmm. It'll be 100, 200, 300 bucks. And what an opportunity to be able to draw an 80-year-old guy bending over right in front of you, as always happens to me whenever I take a live drawing class. I'm like, oh, I'm so great. We got Grandpa Moses coming over here. Oh, and he has to pick up an imaginary apple. Great. And I'm on the receiving end of this. Great. Well, I'm so glad I signed up for this live drawing class. Hooray.
Yeah. And you can just spend the rest of the night contemplating gravity.
The cruelest mistress of all. And we always seem to get the night where Grandpa Moses forgot his teeth, too. What pose would you like me to strike? Hold on, I dropped my teeth.
Yeah, so but there's just take this time for you. I think that's really the most best advice that we can give is that right now you feel kind of down in the dump. You're feeling a little ziggy. You know, you're feeling a little bit like you're lost and alone in a big city. And we were talking in an earlier show about how that really is the essence of Ziggy. And you're feeling bad about it. But so much of what we talk about on this show is taking a look at that same exact thing and then taking a look at the benefits of it. Take a look at the bright side, maybe a little bit of optimism and say, hey, maybe this isn't the worst thing to be alone in a big city. Think of all the great things you can just do completely anonymously. You can just walk out and do friendly, kind things with complete anonymity. You can walk out and go into the world and be and do all kinds of little random acts of kindness. There's lots of stuff that you can do. But first you've got to take control of this moment in your life and say, no, this is a good thing. It's good to be me. It's good to be here. It's good to be in this city. And then, you know, frankly, if you don't feel like leaving the house on a Saturday, stay in and find good things that there are to do at home alone on a Saturday too. Go on a deep dive on that TV series that you've always been meaning to go into, or you know, it, again, like Dave said, do your work, do your comic, do your studying. But so much of this is you mentally and emotionally taking control of it instead of kind of letting these feelings of unworthiness spiral out of control.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, Brad. Good on that one. All right. Well, let's move into our next question from patreon.com/comiclab. And this one details being on government assistance and the possibility of income coming in. This is a really interesting one. We've never had this one before. Without going into too much detail, my luck is breaking bad. I'm on permanent disability and was looking into if I could accept a Kickstarter gig without causing issues with my disability payments. Well, there is a cap on how much I can make in a month. This made me realize I got a Kickstarter I'm planning next year. The amount would be at least three times the amount that would get me instantly investigated because Social Security bases income on the gross amount made per month. Kickstarter doesn't split up the payments. That's true. It comes as one big lump sum. The only thing I can think of is to bring in someone else to help do the Kickstarter to get my name off it, or to go to print on demand and do chunks of promoting over a long period to spread out the incoming funds. I'd love to hear if you have any other ideas to deal with fundraising too much money. So, Brad, first, before we go into this answer, can you explain to folks how government assistance works in terms of income triggers that sometimes happen?
So here's the deal. Here's my understanding of it. And I'm going to parse it that way because I don't have any firsthand knowledge of this. I've talked to people who have been in this similar situation. Mm-hmm. So I've got an understanding of it. So you've got to give me some leeway here in case I don't have this exactly right. But my understanding of how this works is that you have a certain amount of money that that you get for assistance from the government. And if you let's say, and I'm just going to make a number up to make it easy for us to talk about, let's say it's $250. It isn't, but it's an easy number to keep in your head. You have to report any other income that you make. And if you make too much more income, what they do is they take that $250 away. So let's say, and again, I'm going to make numbers up. Let's say that cap is at 100. Okay. So you're making $250, you take on like a part-time job and you make $110. That puts you over that cap. Okay. What they do is they take the $250 away. And now instead of making, shit, 360. Man, I was trying so hard to make that
you
easy.
You know what we need, Brad? We need an English guy standing next to you with a clipboard. Yeah. Do the math faster. Yeah. You've got 45 seconds.
I need Archibald standing there with his clipboard. No, instead of making $360, now they take that $250 away, and now you're only making $110, which way too little money to pay your bills. So you're caught in this weird place where you can't take on a part-time job and get yourself off of disability.
Right.
But you could, if they, for example, if they hired you to be the CEO of General Motors, then you could get yourself off of disability because now you're making $300,000 a month and that $250 isn't going to hurt you. But if you talk to people who are in this situation, getting off of that disability is notoriously difficult because there's this big chasm that you've got to clear.
Right. So it's this weird sort of catch 22 limbo state of like, yeah. You either have to go huge with the income and blow past your disability, right. Or you either have to go all cash or passive income that can be dealt with all, like some people will rent out a spare room if they have one, and right. But the renter has to pay in cash so that the government doesn't trigger that's income, or they'll do, I guess, bartering sometimes, Brad, is ways people get around it. But yeah. Any kind of old timey way that you're not reporting a huge sum of income. And in a case of a Kickstarter, there's no good way to do that because that money has to go through a bank account that you put in at the beginning of your Kickstarter. It's going to come out as one big lump sum. There's no way to ask them to parse it out into individualized kind of, you know, monthly payments.
Yeah.
And it's going to hit somebody's tax record. So
right.
This is where it gets tricky. I mean, what friend do you trust or love or want to suddenly have $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $20,000 hit their bank account, and yeah. You and they would have to figure out the taxes that would be owed, and somehow they'd have to get that to you in cash, which it's always weird if it's a couple $1,000s you're getting, you know, passing that around. Yeah. I'm just saying it's a tricky one in this position.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but there's nobody that I would trust with that money. And there's nobody that I would want to saddle with that extra tax hit. Right.
Right. Because you could be bumping them up into a different tax bracket, depending on what amount you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know,
so the idea of bringing somebody else in is not a good one. Dave, you've got experience forming a corporation. Would it be possible for this person to form a corporation and dodge that? My sense is that might start a whole nother barrel of worms. Go ahead.
The truth here is that neither Brad nor I are tax accountants or specialists in this.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that you when you set up a corporation, you have to set up shareholders. And if it's just you as the 100% shareholder of that corporation and the corporation has brought in X amount of money, yes, it's true that I'm guessing the corporation could pay you out on a salaried basis that ekes this out in a small number.
Yeah.
But if you've set up the corporation like as a pass-through, as a C-corp, now we're getting too detailed, but what I'm getting at is I somehow feel like that would still flag the IRS and they'd be like, hey, what's going on? Or Social Security rather. And they'd be like, what's going on here with this income? Where's this coming from? Who owns this? You seem to be the 100% shareholder of this corporation.
Yeah.
This seems weird. So part of this is me admitting my own naivete that I don't know that there's a great solution here because anyone that I can think of seems to trigger either Social Security or the IRS unless you bring in a second party. And I'll be honest, that's a whole can of worms bringing in a second party to transit money for you.
Plus, you know that your taxes get more complicated when you form a corporation. This is not just I'm just going to form a corporation and then everything's going to go away. All of a sudden, your tax requirements, once you form even something as simple as an LLC, you start to go down that road, your taxes get way more complicated, which means that, again, like Dave said, I think that it would be something that you'd be flagging, putting a red flag up for the IRS. I don't know of a good answer for this. I think this is something, Dave, that you'd be much better off talking to someone who knows what they're talking about, like an accountant, like a CPA. Not a couple of jerks that do a podcast. I don't know that we can give this person good advice. I will say this. One of the options there was print on demand. I actually, as long as you don't do Like, as long, in other words, they're not talking about doing a Kickstarter that's fulfilled with the print on demand book, right, which I have very strong opinions on. I don't know though whether you and I have ever talked about that before, but just saying, putting this book up as print on demand, so mm-hmm. then you could feasibly control your payouts at that point. You can right. only take a certain amount every time and then leave it in that other account until then. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That might be the better option to do that. What are your thoughts?
I mean, here's the problem with that is that if you do it as a print on demand, doesn't matter what the company is.
Yeah.
It's still let that first month is still going to be your biggest month. And the problem is if it goes you know this better than Brad and I, if it goes even a dollar over what your triggering event is for your disability, then you've probably borked your next couple of months of payments, you know? And so I don't know a way to put a governor on how many people you'd have to say only 20 are available this month. What do you think?
No. In a lot of print on demand places, you can control the amount of money that you pay out, that you get paid out. So in other words, let's say you made $1,000, you could take a payout of $100 for some of these. You don't have to take that whole lump sum. You can control it, depending on the server that, depending on the platform you're using.
Where is that money existing?
In the, like a drive-through comics, for example. I just did a payout recently, and I had a certain amount of money in there. I could take out a portion of it, and then the rest of it just stays in drive-through's bank account. They're happy to draw interest on it.
Oh, because, yeah, they're pulling interest on it.
Yeah.
But okay, so I see why drive-through would do that. But wouldn't the IRS consider the income as of the point where it was generated to that drive-through account? In the same way that, Brad, I have a PayPal account, but the IRS considers that a banking account for all intents and purposes. So when I sell an original art, even though I don't pull the money out of my PayPal into my my corporate banking account, the IRS still considers that the point of income.
You know what? That very well may be. And I don't know enough about it to tell you a yes or a no.
Basically, this is two guys saying we're not clear on the accounting on this. And it's good that because, you know, 99% of the time we can give you a good, solid answer that's backed by 20, 25 years of cartooning advice. This is one of those times where I think if you want to do a Kickstarter and how wonderful that you do, I think Brad hit it on the head. You might want to just pay for an hour of an accountant's time or 15 minutes of an accountant's time for their advice and say, listen, I have one single question. How do I get this income from point A to point B without ruining my disability?
Right. Yeah. And especially since that's such a big and intense part of your life, you don't want to screw it up. So this is some place where you want to get a CPA involved.
The only other way I can think of doing this is if you do print on demand, is you do put a governor on it. You say only 20 are available this month because you know 20 will generate, $15 less than your cap of side income. And so every month you release 20, that could work. It's not very exciting. It's kind of a weird way to have to do marketing, but maybe it could work based on the reduced capacity to sell 20. I don't know. That could work. But best of luck with it, because this is one of those rare times where Brad and I don't have a solid footing answer for you. But it was a fun walk down conversation, at least. This is a unique problem, and our sympathies go out to you. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
Well, Dave, it's time to address another Patreon backer who's got a question. And this one comes in from Jonathan, who says, Brad and Dave, thanks for a fantastic show. But you keep answering my questions with hard truths that I've already been told by you and others before. Where are the secret magic pill solutions you two used to become millionaires? Well, I think we're still $1 million short of that, but nevertheless, seriously, though, he continues, I appreciate the wake-up calls you give with your answers and fantastic exclusive materials. All of us need to eat our broccoli and brush our teeth. As much as I logically understand that, part of me still searches for shortcuts. So, Dave, the question is, where did we get the secret magic pills?
The secret magic pills. Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, Jonathan. That was a really nice question, the way you phrased that. And I'm glad that it's helpful. Here's the truth, though, about the secret magic pills and the search for shortcuts is Brad and I are both rounding around year 25 of our online cartooning. Right. Mm-hmm. And I will be honest, Jonathan, because why pretend to be anything else? For most of those 25 years, I looked for the shortcuts. Yep. I looked for the secret magic pills. Yep. And one of the things there's got to be a more beautifully metaphorical way to say it. But sometimes when you're on your journey and you're searching for A, you truly discover B. And what I truly discovered in searching for all those shortcuts for all those years is that there is no substitute for just putting in the work and putting in the mm-hmm. hours. And only by doing 25 years of desperately trying to find shortcuts, desperately yeah. trying to find secret magic numbers or hashtags that would get me further on in my career. Yep. But by continuously showing up to do the work, even though I was looking for shortcuts the whole time, by showing up yeah. to do the work, that was sort of the answer that I was looking for the whole time.
Yeah. The secret magic pill is failure.
That's what do you mean? Explain that.
There's no other. Well, no, I mean, the secret magic pill is doing it wrong, figuring it out, doing it again, doing it wrong, figuring it out. The secret yeah. magic pill is going out there, screwing up and picking yourself up, dusting yourself off and doing it again.
Yes.
And listen, that's the theme of this show. If anything, if Dave and I have one kind of abiding passion that is behind doing this show, other than just the friendship of talking with each other on a, yeah. on a weekly basis.
While Englishmen yell at us while we urinate.
Yes, yeah. yes. the passion there is that we're trying to hope to get you past some of those really dumb failures that we had.
Yeah. So yeah.
the stuff that we can see walking up Broad Street just isn't going to work. You know, hashtag webcomics. We can look at that and say, stop it, stop it, stop it.
Right, right, right.
You got to go out there and make some brand new mistakes. These ones we can tell you about. We
yeah,
can,
exactly.
In other words, we're trying to get you to make, I don't know that it'll ever fit on a t-shirt, but the whole theory of Comic Lab is trying to get you to make better mistakes.
Wouldn't that be fun if we had a branded shirt that said Comic Lab, make new mistakes?
Yeah, yeah, make better mistakes, because there's a bunch of stuff that we can tell you from. And even if there was no such thing as a hashtag yeah. when we started in the year 2000, but we can see certain things that just are immutable, things yeah. that just come. They come back with a new face on them, but it's the same old mechanism underneath time and time again. There's a bunch of stuff that we can, with a great deal of confidence, steer you away from. And right. that's with one abiding theory or one abiding thought. And that is so you can dodge all of those easy ones that we've already laid out in front of you saying, okay, here's some stuff you can easily avoid. So you can go out there and get a head start over where we would have been in the same place in our journey. And you can start to make all new mistakes for us all to learn from.
Yeah. Amen. I will say too, is that Brad really hit on a point that I would love to iterate on more, which is the failing and then picking yourself up and getting right back to it. And yeah. that to me, I've said this before, but I shouldn't speak for Brad, but I will. Both Brad and I are not the most talented cartoonists you will ever meet.
We're not.
We're really not. I will never be Watterson. I'll never be John Byrne. I'll never be Romita. I'll never be any of these people. I know what
you'll
I
never
am,
be
which
Ernie
is,
Bushmiller.
Yeah. That's cutting. That's hitting below the belt. Boy, you and Archie are both hitting me below the belt this week. I don't appreciate that.
I had a whole idea and I couldn't. I was just going to start naming off all the names you're never going to be just to see if I could make you uncomfortable. You're never. But I couldn't think of enough in a short enough
just
time.
Just 2-bit cartoonists that you yeah, and I would admit ne- would.
Listen, Dave, you're never going to be Brad Anderson. You're never going to be. You're never.
Oh man, crying into my soup. No, but the truth is, this is for real. This is the truth. Is that I honestly think I am a history will record me as being a middling cartoonist. I'm not I'm not the natural star talent that shines brightly in the firmament of cartooning, right? Mm-hmm. But what I am is, though, is I have had a stick-to-itiveness that has allowed me to pick myself up after failed books, failed projects, failed individual comics, failed punchlines, failed storylines mm-hmm. that didn't go anywhere, and say, you know what, though? I'm coming back again tomorrow. And you might think that that doesn't count for anything. But one of the reasons why Brad and I get frustrated when people say, oh, you're doing well because you started earlier. Oh, and here's the thing. Thousands of other cartoonists started when Brad and I started, but they didn't keep going. They let whatever it was stop them from cartooning. And so much of life is just keep going and have the confidence to keep going. It's not unlike the advice we gave for the first question asker in terms of just going out and owning your personality when you're living your own individual life in a new city. The same thing is true with your cartooning. Own who you are. Own that you're going to make mistakes and that it's fine, but pick yourself up and keep doing it and do that exact thing year after year after year. And suddenly you'll find yourself with a career.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as you're watching what you're doing and learning from it, that's the second part that's hard is it's easy to go out and make mistakes. God knows I've made enough of them, but it's harder to learn from them. It's harder to take a look at that mistake and say, okay, what did I actually learn from that? I keep going back. You've heard me say it before to Greystone Inn, my first comic strip. And it took me 4.5 years to figure out that this was going to be a non-starter.
Right.
You know, it took me a long time to figure that out. The thing that finally had to happen for me is I had to finally take a really objective look at what I was doing, what the chances for success for that was. Not to wrap myself up in like hopefulness. When Dave is talking about keep doing it at day after day after day, we're not talking about doing it blindly. We're not talking about doing it like, well, listen, I just got to keep drawing this thing and it eventually it's going to hit. The other part of that thing is taking at different points during your life, taking objective looks at what you're doing and modifying based on that. That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part because what you're doing is so subjective, not only for the rest of the world, but certainly for you, because you're so close to it. It's so hard to be objective. And frankly, the only time you're going to get objective is when you've really been knocked on your keister and you're kind of sitting there dazed. That's usually when those objective moments come through to you most clearly.
Yeah.
But, that's the secret. That's the secret is failing, learning from your failure and coming back the next day. And there's an awful lot of people that too, we've got to throw this out there too. A lot of people that started in comics that comics just wasn't their thing. Mm-hmm. And they took what they learned from comics, took it to a different thing, whether it was whatever.
Game design, novels. Exactly.
Yeah. They took that and they ran and that time that they spent in comics wasn't a wasted time. They took all of that stuff that they learned from comics and took it into the next thing. Right. And that was after an objective look that said, well, you know what? Maybe comics is not something that is going to be my forte, but I'm going to take what I learned from comics and take it into the next thing. That's really the secret. All of that is how you process failure.
Yeah. No, that's exactly true. I mean, really, Brad, when someone's saying, I'm still searching for the shortcuts, what they're really saying is, and I think this is true for me now, is that I wish I was just a few years ahead and could snap my fingers, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Pinocchio saying, I wish I was a real boy. I wish I could have the shortcuts that could get me to XYZ faster. And Brad and I will give you whatever shortcuts we've learned, whether it's business, art applications, marketing, you know, it's more tricks than shortcuts. We'll give you what we know. But the truth is, it's no matter how many shortcuts you're given, you still got to put in the 3, 5, 7, 10 years to get to where you want to go. And so when you're asking for a shortcut, what you want is to be teleported 5 years ahead of time. We can't give you that. We can give you tricks to help you become a better cartoonist, better salesperson, better manager of your business. But we can't give you the shortcut that teleports you 5 years ahead to the next stage of your career. You know?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, sometimes the worst thing that could happen to you is a successful shortcut.
Yes. Right? Oh, God. Yes. Holy crap. Yes, that's really true. We've seen that multiple times, haven't we?
Yes.
Where success came too early and someone didn't know how to handle it.
And they didn't know how to handle it. Or even this, like I always go back to, if you've ever heard me give my magic wand talk, right? It's where as a young cartoonist, I thought, oh, if only I could get all I need is for people to see my comic. If they could read my comic, they'd love it. Right. And the only problem I've got is getting them to come look at it. If only I could get a magic wand that would get a million people to look at my comic today. That would be the greatest thing. They would see it, they'd like it, and I'd have an audience.
Right.
And it took me years to look back and realize that if back in 2003, Brad Geiger had that magic wand and brought a million eyeballs to his site that day, 999,000 of them would have disappeared the next day because it wasn't ready. Eyeballs was not the problem. Quality was the problem.
Right,
and you could have brought 1,000 people and 1,000 people would have walked away the next day. Sometimes shortcuts are the worst thing that can happen because you're not ready for it. And it goes back to that. You have the audience you deserved talk. Mm-hmm. You have to understand you have the audience you deserve. There's nothing stopping people from liking your stuff. You're going to build a million, you're going to have a million eyeballs on your stuff over the course of like 10 years.
Yeah.
The question is, did you keep them? That's up to you. That comes back to quality of the comic.
Right. And I'll tell you, Brad, that if 22-year-old Dave had his druthers, it would be an overnight success where, let's just say, let's pick a number, 30,000 people wanted a drive book right now, you know?
Yeah.
Me now, today, Dave of today knows it's far better to have 2%, 5%, even 10% growth better than to have overnight tens of thousands of people suddenly wanting a book.
Oh, man.
I don't know that I would know how to do the logistics for 40,000 orders coming in for a book, you know?
Right.
But I know how to handle 10% growth, 5% growth, 2% growth. The slowly, steady, repeatable business model is so much better than an overnight success where you blow up. It's actually kind of terrifying to me what I would do if I had an overnight success. I don't know what I would do. It would be so tricky. And frankly, I'd probably get taken advantage of by other companies that had to do the fulfillment for me.
Because you'd have to come up with a very quick solution.
Yep.
Absolutely. And there are people right now just waiting to take advantage of that situation.
Right.
There's a lot of really crooked operators out there. So Dave, as long as we're kind of talking, I said earlier about, you know, taking your comic experience and taking it to another thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to feed right into our next question here that comes in from Tyler, who says, with all the artwork comic artists have ready to go, have you ever considered making a board game or a card game of your series? Since artists already have all the assets, backgrounds, character art, etc. The question is, Dave, how come we just don't make a board game?
Well, this is a big swing of a question. So I'm 25 years on Sheldon and Drive now in my cartooning, and I've never done a board game. Even though I would like to do a board game, because who doesn't like board games? Who doesn't like card games? Also, who doesn't like the profit margins of a purely card game? Oh my God, Brad, the margins on those games. Oh, to have the margins of a purely card-based system, there's a reason why Pokemon is one of the most successful things in the world, is because that ain't costing them anything for the cost of goods sold on those units. Anyway, I would love to do a board game for Drive or a card game for Drive. I would absolutely love to do it. But this is a little bit of like, hey, I've got some talent as a creator, Brad. Why don't I do a Broadway play, Brad? Why don't I write an Italian opera, Brad? Hey, Brad, why don't I just go perform a violin at the New York Philharmonic? Why am I doing it? The thing is, it's an easy thing to say. It's a years long thing to do well, I think. Don't you think, Brad?
Well, think about how long it took us and how it looks how long it takes anyone just to learn how to do comics well. Right. It takes a long time to learn how to do comics well. How full of ourselves are we that we think that, it takes a long time to learn to do comics, but any schmuck can do a board game. I got news for you.
That
time that we're out there spending learning how to do comics, there's somebody else learning how to do a board game
or a card game. Decades
and
long,
how to do it well. It isn't a question of having art lying around. It's there's mechanics involved in, like, game mechanics involved in doing a game. There's a certain amount of writing involved in doing a game, because you're basically writing an experience that is going to happen in a million different iterations, and you've got to, it's like a choose your own adventure that goes with every lay of the cards, and you've got to account for that and how that's going to lay out. Holy cats, it's very complicated to doing a board game well. And then I just on the logistics basis, now you've got we can figure out how to print cards well enough, but now you've got packaging and distribution and an awful lot of things. Just that aspect of it, you know, you're going to have to take a beat and learn just the logistics of producing that.
And producing aside, there's a whole separate marketing angle to board games that are very different from comics. Like, take one trip to Gen Con, which takes place in the Midwest there, and is, I think, a 3 or 4 day show. People are ravenous for their gaming, right? But it's a totally different world than comics. Are there parallels? Are there similarities to the creativity of it? Yes, but it's a totally different world to market to and to sell to and to tap into. I think, frankly, Brad, one of the best examples we could say is Catan, Settlers of Catan, right? Like, everyone knows Catan. It's sold 30 or 40 million copies at this point. But I'm going to mess up his name, I think. I think his name is Klaus Tuber or Tober. I always get it wrong. Anyway. The story of how long it took him to come up with that game, like creating a version downstairs in his little basement, bringing it up, trying it out with his family with scraps of paper. Okay, that version didn't work. Goes back down. Different scraps of paper comes back up. You know, they were on like version 48 by the time he brought it to the gaming thing in Germany. Anyway, what I'm getting at is a years long process. Also, many, many multiple failed games before he got to that success, right? So it's a form of ego. It's a kind of a Dunning-Kruger, like you said, Brad, surely learning guitar is easier than comics. So I'll just, I've got a creative streak in me. I could just learn guitar, right? Yeah. Well, no, I mean, if you're trying to be good at it, it's going to take decades and decades and decades. Do I want to do a board game for Drive? Absolutely. Do I have the false confidence to think that it would be great? Absolutely. In my most logical moment, do I know it'll probably be passingly okay as a game? Yeah, probably. Because it's going to take a lot of trial and error, a lot of seeing what works in game engines and then applying it. And I have not put in the time, is the truth.
To be honest with you, if I were to approach this at all, tell me what you think about this. Is this not a better project to do as a licensing project? In other words, to license your work to someone who does know what they're doing, to get to be very careful where the contract is involved, et cetera.
Yeah.
But like, I wouldn't want to spend all that time learning how to do a board game.
Right.
I wouldn't mind licensing my stuff for it. I would collaborate with somebody on a board game if they wanted to license my property. Mm-hmm. And again, keep being very careful on the usage rights and so forth. But I don't know that I would sit there and stop doing comics long enough to do a board game. I guess I'm honest enough with myself to know that that's not my skill set.
Yeah. A lot of this is the escapism of the thing that I'm trying to do, comics, is hard. Maybe I could do a board game. You know, that's a little bit of like, well, that's got to be easier, surely. But without thinking it through, that is just as hard, if not harder. One idea that I have had, Brad, in terms of making a game for Drive is using the copyright systems to my advantage. In the Roman Empire, in the Middle Ages, there were 200, 300, 400 different games that kind of faded from history. They're no longer played. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be fun to do deep research into the best, I don't know, 5 to 10 games of the Roman Empire, the best 5 to 10 games of the Holy Roman Empire, best 5 to 10 games of like Middle Ages, and see if I could apply that gaming engine to a Drive system to make a game. It's no different than Shakespeare saying, oh, hey, look at the Decameron from Italy. I'm going to make 4 plays out of the Decameron. You know what I mean? It's an existing structure. I'm just going to translate it into an English system, and we're going to make a play out of it. I was thinking that that would be fun, is to take Dave Kellett, takes an old Roman game or a Holy Roman Empire game or a medieval game and translates it into a drive engine. I think that could be fun. But anyway, even that is work. That's a ton of work. I'd have to research a bunch of historical games to see what were fun for a modern setting.
Now, having said that, is it impossible? No, it's not impossible. No, it's not in impossible. Fact, right now, Meredith Gran is doing a Kickstarter for her game. I think it's called,
amazing. Yeah.
What is it called? Perfect Tides. It's called Perfect Tides. And I've been watching the Kickstarter for that go. And it's just gangbusters. It is possible. You know, Meredith is out there doing it. And Meredith is someone who's a very, very good cartoonist. It's definitely possible. I don't think I'm in Meredith Grand's league in that regard. I don't think I could do that. And I'm honest enough with myself to say I'm thrilled to watch that success. I just know that that's not me. I don't have that kind of that's not going to be my wheelhouse. I don't have that kind of skill.
Yeah. To reiterate Brad's point is to answer your question, is it possible? Yes. Is it recommended? Not necessarily. I think both Brad and I would say this feels like a little bit of escapism from what you really should be focusing on, which is the comic first. Games are a very different ball game, and they are a whole specific learned and acquired skill set that takes years of trial and error and failing, much like comics do. And so it's not something that can be overnight applied of like, well, I've got the graphics, and the graphics are surely everything that's involved with Monopoly. Right, Brad? Is just the guy with the mustache and the bourgeois atmosphere. That's all you need for, you know. Oh, wait a minute. I got to figure out a game engine for this thing. Oh, geez, Louise. All right. Well,
and that might be part of it, too, is that Meredith has been doing this as long as either one of us, if not longer. So once she was in a place that she was very, very secure with the comic, she was able to improvise. Not improvise isn't the right word, but, you know, spread out and into this other thing. So that might be one of the ingredients of that as well. But for the Comic Lab listener, I think our advice is be very, very cautious. You could end up kind of wrapped up in something that takes you way into the weeds and kind of distracts from the central point of where most of us need to be, and that's working on our comic.
Yep.
So, Dave, it's time for our last Comic Lab question for the show, and it is this. Thank you so much for the laugh and insights. I have a question mainly for Dave. Dave, you've mentioned in the past that you want Sheldon to be a webcomic and nothing else. Now that you've considered wrapping it up, have you reconsidered that position at all? Eagerly awaiting the animated A Very Sheldon Christmas, introducing Oso, signed Chris. So Chris wants to know, Dave, have you changed your mind about keeping Sheldon webcomics only?
The short answer is, Chris, no, I haven't. The even shorter answer is, even if I had changed my mind, I don't know that the world would open up its gates to have a Sheldon show. It's not like anyone's clamoring for the amazing property of Sheldon as an animated feature, you know?
Yeah.
I do think in the fullness of time, Drive will have enough legs as a story to be sold somewhere in some either streaming capacity, whether it's animated or live, I'm not sure. But Sheldon does not have enough there to be sold as a story.
Yeah.
Aside from when Disney, that's a whole nother story. I was going to say, aside from when the Disney lady came up and said, oh, I love these pugs. Have I ever told you the story, Brad?
No.
I love this pug. Have you ever thought about making an animated show? And I said, no, not really. She's like, do you mind if I call you on Monday? Called me on Monday. We had a whole conversation about pugs. I thought nothing of it. We developed nothing. 6 months later, I see that they're developing a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which is all pugs. I was interesting. God. Interesting. Well, isn't that interesting?
I think not.
No, but it's also like, who's to stop them? It's pugs. They're a universal property of the world. Chris, to answer your question, no, I don't think that I would want Sheldon to live anywhere else aside from being a comic. And I don't know that the world wants it to be anywhere else aside from being a webcomic. I'm humble enough to know where that one lives in the grand scheme of things, and where it lives is a webcomic that I enjoy doing. So that's enough of that. How about you, Brad? Evil Inc. Sold onto something. You would still be on that page, yeah?
Oh yeah. That's another one that I would consider licensing it. You know, I've said in the past, especially my dream scenario is the same creative team that did Archer, because that art style speaks mm-hmm. to me so strongly.
Yep.
And the sense of humor is a very good match. I would absolutely love to see that. I would consider licensing it. Of course, at the same time, it's the same answer as before. I'd have to really have an ironclad contract, because so often you end up losing a lot of your own rights when you go into a licensing deal mm-hmm. like that. That it's mm-hmm. not unusual that, hey, we're working on this thing. Now you have to stop working on the comic because we can't have these two things in conflict with each other. We've heard stories like that yep. in the past. So for me, I would consider it, but it literally would have to be the stars aligning just right. Because again, everything that 20 years of self-publishing has told us is to own and control your own work. And it's not just own, but control your own work. So yeah. that has to be that never gets touched. That cannot get screwed around with in the slightest. But to license it under the right circumstance, yeah, I'd consider that.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the reasons why before I do anything with Drive, I want to finish the story before I ever bring it anywhere, because I'm, especially with my wife's career, I'm very cognizant of the fact that as soon as TV or film gets a hold of something, it's no longer yours. And yes. you become a junior partner, a very junior partner in a mm-hmm. much larger machine, a small cog in a much larger machine of which you have no real voice because they've bought the rights to it. And so on rare happy occasions, do they include the original creator? Yes. Are those rare occasions? Yes, those are rare occasions. More than likely, the people that bought it, the producers, the directors, the writers involved, they want to make it for them. And it's now their property in and among the Warner Brothers system or DreamWorks or Pixar or Disney, whatever, wherever you've brought it to, it's now that their project, not yours. Yeah. You were coming in with sort of the originating pitch, and now you're quietly shunted off to the side. And so being cognizant of that, I want to finish my version of Drive first before I ever bring it anywhere, because then it becomes somebody else's entirely. And who knows what rights or obligations I give up in signing over.
Yeah, because then you're absolutely right. They're making it for them. Yeah. And that's something you've really got to take into account. They're making it for them. But by the way, we're making this podcast for you. And we've done it every week for years and years and years. And by golly, we're going to do it again next week. But for this week, it's time for us to say that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
I got to tell you now, I know Brad enough well as a friend where I see his posture change when he sees the transition. You should have seen him come up in energy and the back was straight. And suddenly he had like a jolt of electricity, like Giles had come in and told him to hurry up and finish peeing. Like he was ready to go. He was.
When you said they're making it for them, I'm like, there you go. It was like Wesley came right in with his clipboard and said, you're on.
All right, Ruprik, I get it. I'm done. I'm finishing up. Your hosts have been my friend, Brad Geiger, the king of transitions and the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my close personal friend, Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And a shout out to the producer of CSI Des Moines or whoever it was I was talking to last night. I'm sure your show is great. I apologize that I didn't know which one it was. The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. Brad, there's so many CSIs. That's the problem. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where we are one of the top podcasts over there talking about comics. Thank you so much for cementing us over there. And if you haven't participated, go over there to Spotify and give us a five-star rating.
A five-star review.
I ran out of breath.
I'm so excited about Spotify, everybody. You got to give us a five-star review. It's exciting.
Oh, my gosh. And if you do, you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on Patreon.com/Comic Lab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/CSI Sioux Falls. I was trying to think of the most obscure American city that they could make a CSI from.
I've got a great idea, Dave. Okay, we can do CSI Manchester, where our central character, Giles Ruprecht, comes up and sees a dead body.
I say, are you done peeing yet? The man's been dead for 4 days. I say, get back to your seat, young man. We have 45 seconds until commercial break is over. Yeah. So while they break for commercial, Brad, the house lights kind of go up real quick and they play like soft, like intro, outro music. You know what they should do? They should play speedrun music for like Mario speedrun or like Donkey Kong speedrun, where you're like, you're trying to get to the bathroom and in the background it's just... You're like, God, gotta get to the bathroom. Oh, God.
You're jumping over obstacles. That would actually be tough to do with a full bladder. You could have a whole nother live stream event where people would pay to watch to see if that was who was doing that the best.
Hey, Dave, how was the Emmys? Good. The hardest part, though, was swinging the big sledgehammer.
Boy, you think a lot of yourself, don't you?
Kong. Oh, you got me.
Swinging the big sledgehammer? Holy cats.
That was a Donkey Kong reference.
Listen to you.
Brad's mom, it was a Donkey Kong reference, I promise.
I've heard of people saying, I got to go see a man about a horse, but when Dave turns to Abe Vigoda and says, excuse me, I've got to go swing the big sledgehammer? Holy cats. That's... Ha 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 ha!